Okay, so we are holding on page Tzadik Hay in Brachos, the paragraph Mishnah Rabbi Hodayim, middle of Oiz Kuchokhes. Continuing on the topic of Brachos that you say when you see things, so the Mishnah says, Rabbi Hodayim, Haroyas a Yamagodol, if a person sees the Yamagodol, and here you have a Machloikos Aposkim, which one that means. The Beis Yosef brings a tshuva from the Rosh that it means the ocean, as in the Atlantic or Pacific or what have you. But then in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber brings that it means the Mediterranean. So there's a good deal of discussion about the ins and outs of that. Anyway, so
Rabbi Tzadik,
when I mention the page, I usually mean Omid Aleph. If I meant the other side, I would have said the English number. So Rabbi Yehuda says, when you see the Yamagodo, the ocean or the Mediterranean, as the case may be, Omer Baruch Sha'osa as a Yamagodo, then you say special bracha to Hashem for creating the great sea, Bizman Shira'eru L'Prokim. Now that applies only when you see it once in a while, which the halacha is once in a while is once every 30, not less than 30 days. So most of the Birkas Ra'iyah that we said are the same kind of things. We had before, for example, the bracha about Kvarim, we had the bracha about many of them not. For example, the bracha on the rainbow and thunder and lightning, whatever that you can say within 30 days, because it's a new rainbow and it's a new storm and so forth. But the other kinds of things, many of the other things, you only say them if it's more than 30 days apart. So the Gemara says, the prokim ad kama, what is the definition of the prokim? Omer Rami ba'ama, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak ad lamed yoim, up to 30 days, less than that, it's not considered a new thing and therefore you don't say bracha. The Gemara continues. If a person sees the Pros River from the bridge of Bavel, so there was a particular bridge, the Pashtos near the city of Bavel. We learned earlier in the Perek about the city of Bavel that was destroyed and the ruins of it. You make special brachas when you're there. So now, if you're standing on that bridge and you see the Pros River, then you say the bracha on that, because you know that's one of the rivers that Hashem created at the beginning. It's one of the four rivers that came out of Gan Eden. And therefore you say a bracha on it. And the point is, upstream of that point, the river's course was never changed. As opposed to downstream of that, they diverted it to canal and made canals and whatever. So therefore it's not in the original stream bed that it was when Hashem created it. And the Gemara says, nowadays, in a later time after Rami Bar Abba had said that, the Persians who ruled over Babel at that time diverted it further. So then, you'd only say the bracha only if you see it upstream of Beis Shabur, which is someplace further up where they didn't divert it after that. Rabbi Yosef mentions a different landmark called Ihi Dekir. Whatever the case, so there's a part of the river that was never diverted, that was never changed, and that's what you would say the bracha on, but not other parts that were diverted and turned into canals and whatnot. But Omer Rami Ba'aba, and similarly, Rami Ba'aba says, Haroya Diglas, similarly, if a person sees the Chideko, Diglas is the Aramaic name for that river, Agishra, the Shabistana, and he sees it from the Shabistana bridge, same thing. Then again, he makes the bracha, because again, the idea is that upstream of that river, you're looking at a part that was never diverted. So the Gemara asks, by the way, since we're mentioning the Diglas, which is another name for the Chideko River, my Chideko, why is that river called Chideko? Now, why is the Gemara asking about that more than any of the other rivers that are named here and there in the Torah? So the Torah Tmima has an interesting point that we've mentioned before here in the Shir. In general, Shoshim in Lashon Kodesh are made of three letters. Most words have a three-letter Shoresh. So therefore, whenever we come across in a pasuk a word that seems to have a four-letter Shoresh, or sometimes even five letters, so the Gemara tends to assume, says the Torah Tmima, that it's actually a combination of two other words. So therefore, the Gemara wants to find out what are those words that were combined together to make this name. So Omer of Ashi, Shemem of Chadin V'Kalim. The water of it is sharp, And the water of it is sharp and light. So Rashi says Chadin means Charifin. The water flows very fast, and Kalin means it's easy. It's good for the digestion. So Rashi actually says that it actually weighs less than other kind of water, and it's also good for the digestion. Unlike regular most water, you drink it and it makes you feel heavy. This kind actually is not like that. Maybe it has more oxygen in it, who knows. Anyway, my pros, so since we're mentioning the name of Chidekel, so why is the pros called that? Shemema Porin Verovin, the reason is because the water of it is Porin Verovin. Now that has a few different meanings. Rashi on the Gemara elsewhere in Bechoros, that also mentions about the name of this river. And Rashi over there explains that unlike most rivers, which most of the time they stay the same size, and then when you have rainfall, then it grows larger. The pros grows larger by itself without you noticing a reason why. And the reason is because more water wells up from the ground, from the stream bed underneath it, from the water sources that supply it, and therefore it gets bigger even at times when there wasn't any rainfall. Another point, so Rashi over there in Bechoros explains that it means that the water itself increases in, like this. Usually you have most rivers, they're a certain size, and then during the rainy season or during the snowy season, then they get bigger, because then you have more water in them. Here the Pros has more water in it even at other times when you wouldn't expect there to be, because you have more flowing from the springs that supply it, or from the underground aquifers or whatever that supply it. That's what we're saying. That's exactly the point. Another point, other Mephoshim say that Korin Verovin also means that the water of the Pros is very good, it's very good for the body. It helps the body grow and develop more than water from other rivers, and also that it's beneficial for plants, that it helps plants grow very well. So the Gemara mentions, by the way, of Omar Rava, Hai de Charifi b'nei Mechuza, the reason why the people of Mechuza are so sharp. Mechuza is a city in Bavel. Rava was the Rosh Hashiva, and the Rava over there. So the people from there are particularly sharp. The reason is Mishum de Shosu Maya de Diglas, because they drink water from the Chidekel. The city of Mechuza was located by the Chidekel River, so that's where they get their water supply from. And because we said that water is Chad and Mekalin, then therefore that gives them also that trait of being very sharp people. And the reason why they're red, the reason why their skin is reddish, Mishum de Meshamshi be Mama, the reason is because they have relations during the day. So Rashi explains, therefore, since during the day you have the reddishness of the sun is why, therefore, maybe like more sort of like sunburn, I guess. So therefore, their children end up being more red skin than you would expect. And on another point about the people of Mechuza, the reason why their eyes seem to wander and flutter is Mishum the Dairu Bais Ophel, because they tend to live in dark houses without a lot of windows. So therefore, like they're in the semi-darkness over there inside their houses, and therefore, like that weakens the muscles of their eyes. So there's different things that Rava is pointing out about his balabatim in the city that you should know about. Okay, the Mishnah had said ala geshomim chula, that when rain falls, you say the Mishnah says you say baruch atov ametiv. And it doesn't mean, by the way, every time there's a rainfall. The poskim talk about what it means is when there's been a drought. So in Chutz La'aretz, in general, we don't have this, because in Chutz La'aretz, there's rarely, in most places, there's rarely a drought that's severe, that rain is such a beneficial thing. In Eretz Yisrael, it's different. But yeah. So for the same reason, by the way, you can find in the Fat Sedurim, they have a tefillah that you say over there when there hasn't been rain, tefillah lat siris geshamim, a tefillah to say when there's been too much rain. In Chutz La'aretz, we rarely, if ever, say those tefillahs. In Eretz Yisrael, once in a while, the Bata Dinim will put out an announcement that you should be saying them. Anyway, so the Gemara asks about like, Shamma tova metiv mevarech, you're telling me you say hatova metiv when rain falls, but didn't Rabbi Bohu say, Ba'amilov Masnisaton, or others say it actually goes back to a Braisa. First of all, Me'emasai Mevorchen al Gshamim, at what point, how much rain has to be falling that you would say any kind of bracha on it? The amount is, Meshiyetze Chosim the Kras Kala, when the Chosim comes to meet the Kala. So there's a few different explanations. Rashi explains like this, you have puddles on the ground. When you have a drop of rain falls into a puddle, then sometimes you'll have like it'll fall in, and there'll be a splash up from the puddle that goes kind of to meet it. Like the rain falls hard enough on the puddle that it makes some of the water splash back up. That's the chosin going to meet the kala, so to speak. Interestingly, that the Gemara in Tainus actually tells us the rain is more like the husband, Mitra Baila Da'ara, but here we seem to be saying the other way around, the rain is like the kala coming, and then the chosin comes out to greet it. Anyway. That's one explanation. In Tainis, it actually gives a different explanation, which is also in the Aruch, that it means so you'll have from all the side streets, you'll have rain pouring down the street, pouring into the main street. So when you have that, the rain has been so intense that now you'll have pouring in one direction from a side street, and then the other direction from the other side street, and like they meet in the middle on the main road, then that's Shriyat Chos and the Kaskala. The Rambam gives yet another definition, which is that when it's raining into puddles, you have ripples that form in the puddles. When there's so much rain that the ripples from one drop meet up with the ripples of the other one, then you know it's raining enough to be making the bracha. So now, my mevorchin, what is the actual bracha that you say? And now, this is why the Gemara is bringing this in, because the Mishnah had said you say v'atayatay v'ameitim. Now, instead, this statement of Rabba Bohu, or the Braisa, is going to be saying a different bracha. So Omer of Yehud, this is a continuation. This is not part of the bracha. This is not part of the braisa. This is an Amora explaining. So, but an Amora can't contradict the mission. So Omer of Yehuda, says, Moedim anachnu loch al kol tipa b'tipa shayrad talanu. You say the bracha. We thank you, Hashem, for every single drop that you brought down for us. Rabbi Yochanan would say you have to continue the bracha. You don't just say that one line. He says you continue with the line with the paragraphs from Nishmas. Even if our mouths were full of song, like the sea is full of waves, and so on and so forth, and all the mashalim we give over there, we wouldn't be able to ever finish thanking you, Hashem. And you keep on going ad tishtachve, and you keep on going until the poskim actually don't have that. That one, they just say you go until Einonim speaking Lahodis Lacha. Anyway, and then you finish off with a bracha, Baruch Ata Hashem, Roiv Ha'idos. When there's rain, but again, we're saying not just Stam every time there's rainfall. When there was a drought, when there was a Atziras Geshomim, there wasn't rain for a while, and there's tremendous trouble. So now you're making this bracha that Hashem is sending rain. Yeah. And we finish off, says Rabbi Yochanan, Baruch Ata Hashem, Roiv Ha'idos. Blessed are you, Hashem, with the many thanks. So the Gemara asks, the Loshen seems odd. Roiv ha'idos, for like kol ha'idos. What are you saying? Roiv makes it sound like you're saying, Hashem, we're only thanking Hashem with most of the thanks, not all of them. Why shouldn't we say all of them? Omar Rabba, ema hokeil ha'idos. So Rabba says, you're right. Instead, you should say hokeil ha'idos, Hashem whom we thank. Omar Rapapa, so Rapapa says, like we had yesterday, that Rapapa often makes this compromise between different opinions about what the nusach of the bracha is to say. So the Papa says, Hilkach Nemrinu L'Tavayu, therefore actually you should say both of them, Roiv Ha'idois for Hokeil Ha'idois. So you say both. So what's the point of it? The Rambam actually has a slightly different girsa. He says that you say, Keil Roiv Ha'idois V'Atishbacha. So you don't repeat the word Ha'idois, but you mention Hashem, to whom we give the many thanks and the many Tishbachas. The poskim bring that without the word Atishbachas. The question is still, after all, I mean, okay, Rapapa is making a compromise, but what's the point behind that compromise? What's the point of using both the shoyness? So Marsha refers to Rabbeinu Yonah on the Rif, who gives an answer that something along the lines of that if we only said Roi V'Haidois, then we would think Taka, it means only most of them and not all of them. But if you said Kei V'Haidois, then it might be construed to mean something like, it means we only give Hashem some of the praises and not all of them. So therefore, instead we say both, making it clear that we're giving Hashem all the praises. Marsha says over here, that's a doich. So he says, we already mentioned kol ha'idos. We said our kol tipa v'tipa. We had in Rabbi Yehuda's Nusach, which Rabbi Yochanan is agreeing to and just adding to, he says, we're thanking Hashem for every single drop. So therefore, you don't have to say kol ha'idos at the end. But still, if you finished off with only roiv ha'idos, you would think, says Marsha, people might understand that to mean that now you changed your mind. First, you're saying we thank Hashem for everything. And now we're saying we're only thanking Hashem for most things. But we have to say Kela Haidos. But if we only said Kela Haidos, then it would only mean that it's referring to the Kol Haidos that we said before. It wouldn't imply the many Haidos, the many other things we have to thank Hashem for. Therefore, you say Kale and Roiv, and that way it makes it clear that you're not only thanking Hashem for every single drop, which that you mentioned earlier in the bracha, but you're also thanking Hashem for the many other things that he does. And it's clear that the word Roiv doesn't mean most, it means the many. So again, and again, the Rambam and the other and the later poskim say it somewhat differently. That you say Kale Roy, the Rif, I think, first says that you say Kale Roy Vahidois.
Is it then?
The Rif, I think, is the first one who says that. Okay. So, The point is the Gemara is asking, the Gemara is bothered by, so when are you saying Atov Vametiv, if instead you're saying Misbracha? And so the Gemara talks about in the part that's in the Gemara itself, not here in Ein Yaakov, draws a distinction between whether you yourself own land or whether you don't. If you yourself own land, then it's Atov Vametiv because it's good for you and it's good for the other farmers. If not, then you say Misbracha, and so on and so forth. The Mishnah had said, Mevorech ala ra me'ein ala tova. You say, now the Mishnah had said that on good news you say Hatov Vametiv, and on bad news, Rachman Alatzan, you say Dina Emes. And then the Mishnah says, Mevorech ala ra me'ein al hatova. You make a bracha on something bad in a way that it brings about something good in the style of ala tova, meaning in the way, in the kind of thing where it brings tova. So the Gemara says, "Hey, dummy, what does that mean? How do you have a rod that brings to a toga? For example, we're going to shuckle bidka ba'are. Suppose, for example, a person has a flood in his field. Bidka literally means like a crack. So imagine they had canals in their fields, and you had walls around them like the dikes or like you have in different places in the world. You have dikes and sandbags and things like that to hold back the water. So now if there's a leak in it, if you have a crack in it, then your field gets flooded. So I forgot the tub of who did he get. So even though it comes out in the end, it's going to be good for him. Damaska ara sutone. In the end, now you have the result of that is once the water goes away, it deposited a lot of new topsoil over there. Now your field is going to be a lot more fertile in the future. The shavcha, and it's going to be improved. Hashtamir rahi, but right now it's a bad thing because your crop for this year is ruined. Therefore, you would say Dina Emes on it.
They're over moisture.
Yeah, if a field is overwatered, then it's going to destroy the crop. Sure. And vice versa, when we say you make a bracha on something good, me'ein of something bad, means the other way around. You have something good right now, which is going to lead to something bad. Hey, dummy. So what's an example? You're going to ashkach mitzia. Suppose, for example, you find a treasure, an expensive lost object. Now, eventually, there may come out something bad from it. The Shama Bamalka, if the king hears about it, Shokulamine, he's going to take it away from you. There were places in those times, for example, the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia, the Persians had a law like that. If you found any treasure, it officially belonged to the royal treasure. So you could be in trouble as a result of finding this treasure. So you can have not only you lose what you have, but if they think that you're holding some of it back, then you're going to be in bigger trouble. And that, by the way, there's a somewhat similar law in England, for example, that in the UK, that if you find certain kinds of buried treasure, like gold or silver, kaolin or what have you, then officially they're crown property. So you do have such a concept even now. Anyway, so even though you may end up, something bad may come from it, hashtag miyatoibi, right now, it's a good thing, because right now you have your hands on this treasure. And the point is, in other words, don't worry, don't look so much at how it's going to be in the future. Right now it's good, or right now it's the opposite. Therefore, you go according to the situation now. What may happen, but it's not necessarily going to happen. The Mishnah continues, Hatsayak al Masha Over. If a person screams out and cries out to Hashem about something that happened in the past, so he's asking Hashem to change the past, Harizu Tfilas Shom, then it's a useless tefillah because Hashem's not going to change the past. Ketzad, so what's an example? The Mishnah continues, Hoysa Ishtin Muberes. Suppose a man's wife is pregnant. He says, Yehirotz and Shetelit Ishti Zachar, may it be Hashem's will that my wife should give birth to a boy. How is it Tfilas Shav? Then it's a Tfilas Shav, because already when the baby was conceived, then it's either a boy or a girl, and there's no change. As the Gemara is going to ask, but actually the Gemara is going to establish that there are times when it can be changed, but we'll get to that. Similarly, continues the Mishnah, Hoya Baba Derech, if a person was coming back home on the road, the Shama Kil Tzvacha Ba'ir, he hears a sound of screaming from the city. But Oimon, he says, Yehirotzin Shalo Yehe B'Seich Besi, may it be Hashem's will that this is not, that whatever this tragedy is that they're crying about should not be in my house. How is it Tfilas Shrub? That's also a Tfilas Shrub. It either is in his house or it's not, and there's no change. So the Gemara asks, as far as the one about the pregnant wife, V'loy ma'anu rachmi, really, you're telling me it won't help, it's never going to help that Hashem will change the sex of the baby? But we find that Rab Abba or Rab Yosef pointed out a question. The question is, what, on this that it says in the Pasuk, so it lists how Leah had six boys, and then it says, V'achar Yolda Bas. After that, she had a girl, V'tikra Shma Dina, and she named her Dina. So what's this my V'achar? What's this V'achar? So first of all, so in other words, the first of all, Marsha says, because by all the other children, it never says V'achar, it says V'tahar, V'tahar, V'talin. So what's this V'achar all of a sudden? Also, Marsha says, another point is that it, with all the other children, it gives a reason. She gave birth to a boy and she named him Reuven because such and such. She named him Shimon because such and such. Here, all of a sudden, it just says that she named her Dina without giving any reason why. Therefore, the Gemara is understanding that the Va'achar itself provides the reason why she called her Dina. Marsha also brings from Medrash Tanchuma that says that it's Darsh, that the Drosha is also, why does it say Va'achar, which is Lashon Zohar, rather than it's a girl born over here, which should be Va'acheres, but he says our Gemara evidently is not using that method of Darsh. Anyway, so what happened? Omarav La'acha Shadon Leah Din Ba'atzma means that it was after Leah judged herself on this. Omra, when she was pregnant again, she says, "Lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Yud Beis Shvatim Asidin Lotzis Mi Yaakov." There are 12 Shvatim who are destined to come out of Yaakov, which Marusha says she wasn't really a Nevi'ah. She's not listed as one of the seven Nevi'ahs. None of the Yemari saw except for Sarah. So we're not saying that she's saying it as Nevuah. She had Ruach HaKodesh, or maybe Yaakov told her, or whatever it is. Anyway, but she knew there's going to be 12 Shvatim. Shita Didi. So far, I've had six. The Dalad de Bnei Shvachas, so far the Shvachas, Bila and Zilpah have had four. Ha'asara, so far we're up to 10. Im Zezacher, if this baby I'm pregnant with now is a boy, then that's the 11th one. Loitahe Rachel Achosi, Kachas Bnei Shvachas. My sister, Rachel, who hasn't even had any children yet, is not even going to have as many children as the Shvachas. She's only going to have one more to have. Miyad Nepcha V'Hoysa L'Bas. So right away, the baby was transformed and became a girl. Shenema V'Tikra as Shemaldina. So therefore, that's why the Pasuk says, so now we understand, V'Acha, after she had all those six boys, now she was bethinking it, and now, and therefore, because of this, V'Tikra Shemaldina, that is why it says that she called her name Dina, Shedona Dina La'atzma, that she judged herself and made and came up with the verdict for herself of how it should be. So the point is, in other words, that that you could daven for the gender of the baby to be changed. Yeah. So the one answer is Ein Maskir and Maisin Nissen. Come on, you can't mention Maisin Nissen. That was a special case, but a regular person can't daven to the Eibishter for Nissen. Nissen that are within Derech HaTeva, fine, but not that kind of mess. The Iboyseima, or another possibility, Hosam or Maisa Deleya, Besoich Mem Yoim Haba. Another possibility is this story with Leah. She realized it and made this judgment and this verdict on herself within the first 40 days after she conceived the baby. And then it taka does work. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, shloisha yomim harishonim, during the first 3 days after a woman conceives, after he has relations with his wife, yuvaka shadim rachnim shalo yasriach. The appropriate thing for a husband to daven for is that the zera shouldn't spoil. It takes up to 3 days for it to implant and start developing into a baby. During those first 3 days, it could just spoil and get ejected from the body. So therefore, during those first 3 days, then that's what to daven for. Migimel vad mem, after 3 days, once it's implanted, until 40 days, yivaka shrachim, she hezacher, then is an appropriate time to daven that it should be a boy. I mean, mem yoyim vad gimel chadoshim, after 40 days, it's too late, sex of the baby is already set. Bad gimel chadoshim. So until then, until the end of the first trimester, yivakish rachmim shalo yehi sandal. Then the appropriate thing to do is to daven that the baby shouldn't become a sandal. The Gemara mentions in various places in Nida and here and there in Shas that there can be a situation where a baby ends up getting crushed and flattened out, and a sandal is literally, I mean, it's actually the name of a type of fish, a type of flat fish that actually looks like a sandal, which is why it's called that. And the point is, the baby can. So 1 second. So Rashi and Tosfos argue in a few places in Shas how that could conceivably happen. Rashi learns in a number of places, in Yavamis and in Nida and whatever, that what can happen is after the woman is pregnant, she could get pregnant again. It is very rare, but there are such things described in medical literature. They call it superfetation. So conceivably then she could become pregnant with the second baby, and the second baby will crowd out the first one and flatten him and turn him into a sandal. Mm-hmm. Tosfos in those various places argues on that and says, no, that's impossible. The Gemara establishes in other places that once a woman is pregnant, she's not going to become pregnant again, because once she's pregnant, she stops ovulating. No ovum, no baby. But so rather, Tosfos says the vote is that the pressure, as during different times during the pregnancy, that they have relations, the husband may lie too heavily on her and crush the baby and make it into a son. Whatever the case, up to 3 months is the time when that could conceivably happen. So therefore, that's the time during the pregnancy to daven that shouldn't happen. Next, Migimel Vadvov, from the end of the third month to the end of the sixth month, second trimester, Yivakash Nachmu Shalai Yehi Nefel. Then the appropriate thing to daven for is that the baby shouldn't be a stillborn. Mivav Vad Tes, after 6 months, up until 9 months, at that point, once the pregnancy has been 6 months or a little over 6 months, the baby can be viable. So now, even if the baby is born premature, it's not necessarily going to be a nafel. Before 6 months, if it's born, it's almost certainly going to be stillborn. But after that, it's possible for it to be born live. So therefore, you don't need to daven for that anymore. Instead, you should daven for rachman, that the baby should come out peacefully, that the labor should be easy, there shouldn't be any complications before that. So we see, in other words, that up to 40 days, you can daven for the sex of the baby to be changed. And so we can say that's what lay in. Up to 40 days. And so the Gemara asks still, Mima Hanu Rachmi. So now let's ask the other way around. Is Rachamim effective? Isn't the sex of the baby determined right when it's conceived? If the woman is Mazria first, then she'll have a boy. And there's different explanations of what Mazria means in this context. It can mean that she ovulates first, or it can mean that she reaches satisfaction first. Whatever the case, the point is, if that happens, Yoledes Zohar, she'll have a boy. Ish Mazria Tchila Yoledes Nekeva. And if the husband does first, then she'll have a baby. The pasuk says, when the woman is Mazria, when the woman produces Zera and then gives birth to a boy. So we see that when she does it first, then when she reaches whatever that is first, then it'll be a boy. So in that case, at the time when they had relations, either he was Mazria first or she was Mazria first. So it's already set then. So how can you daven during the 40 days that it should be changed? There's a number of different explanations that various Rishonim and Achronim give what the mechanism is behind that. Why is it that Ish Mazria Tchila Yoledes Zohar, Yoledes Nekeva, and so forth? One explanation that a number of Rishonim bring is an idea that it always goes according to whoever was the last one. So therefore, since in the case of Ish Mazria Tchila, the husband is the one who is Mazria second, therefore his kind of overpowers her and you have a boy. And then vice versa, if the Ish is Mazria Tchila. In Chassidus, in a number of places, it mentions that and says that's not really the reason. And it talks about the Pnimiyus in Yonim, that when you have Isha Mazras Tchila, the Makabel is Mazria first, so then you have a much more intense, like we talk about an Avoida between us and Eivishter, when we initiate it with Chassidus of Lasata, then the result of it is much stronger and much more long-lasting and permanent, represented by a Zohar, who is a Mashpia, rather than the other way around, then you end up with a Nekeva, a Makabel. Anyway, whatever the case, the point is, so l'chora, it's set when the baby is conceived. So what kind of 3 month, what kind of 40 days business? The answer is hochad mayaskin and she's riush shneim b'vasachas. Yes, but we can be talking about over here, they were both mazria at the same time. So then the sex of the baby is up in the air for 40 days, and then you have during those 40 days you can daven for it to be one or the other. Marshab refers over here to something that he discusses in Nida, where you also have this Gemara about the Ish Mazria Tchila and the whole thing with Leia and everything. So Marshab points out over there is that the question has been asked. Since we just said that Leia was originally carrying a boy and then Hashem transformed it into a girl, well then, in that case. So now the Gemara explains over there, besides for the Pasuk Isha Kisazria of Yod HaZachar, you also have Psukim in Parashas Vayigash. You have a Pasuk over there where it's listing out the descendants of Yaakov, and it says, Ela B'nei Leia, these are the sons of Leia, based Dina Bitoi and his daughter Dina. And the Gemara says, from that you also see that Isha Mazras Tchila, then you have boys, therefore it refers the boys to Leia and the girl Dina to Yaakov. So Marashah says, well, based on our Gemara over here, that doesn't seem to fit. Because it comes out Dina was originally a boy. So Marsha mentions over there that the Mizrahi gives an answer on Chumash, and Marsha says it's a bit of a doichet. He says the answer is that actually there's a different medrash, different than our Gemara, that says that it's not that Dina was transformed from a boy into a girl. It's rather at the same time Rochel was pregnant, but Rochel was pregnant with a girl. Leah was pregnant with a boy. What the Eibishter did is he switched the babies from one womb to the other. So now Dina, who was originally conceived by Rachel, it, and as a girl, because Ishma Zuriyat Chila with Yaakov and her, instead that baby went into Leah and vice versa. So therefore, it's still correct to say that Dina was a girl as a result of Ishma Zuriyat Chila, and Yosef was a boy as a result of Ishma Zuriyat Chila. In other words, Hashem made a nest that the baby that was in Leah's womb was transferred to Rachel's, and vice versa. By the way, that medrash that Maharsha refers to over there is actually one of the major sources in halacha for the whole question of surrogate motherhood. You have nowadays the whole concept where a baby can be conceived by one woman and then using an egg from one woman, whatever, and then they transplant it into another woman's womb, and it grows there, and eventually that other woman gives birth to it. And you have big questions in halacha: which one is considered the mother of the baby, the one whose egg it was, or the one who carried it? Right. So one of the sources that they bring for that purpose is that medrash about Rachel and Leah and Yosef and Dina. Because after all, we see Yosef is called what? What's the bottom line? So there's different opinions among the poskim. And by the way, they do actually say that might be. An interesting point they mention in that connection, we know it says that after Dina was violated by Shechem, and after Shechem and Levi went and wiped out the whole city, so it says right there that Dina refused to leave until Shimon promised that he'd marry her. So the question becomes, how could he? Even Bnei Noach, even if you say the Shvatim were considered Bnei Noach at that point, a full brother is not allowed to marry a full sister. And Shimon and Dina are a full brother and sister because they got the same father and the same mother. An answer is based on this medrash that actually Dina's mother is really Rachel. So in that case, they talk have different mothers.
But you said they plant the two women, they plant from one another, and there's no father.
Oh, so you see.
Excuse me, please.
No, one second. No, we're talking about
no father.
No, of course there's a father. No, we're not. Yeah, what we're talking about is, in other words, you can have a woman who, for whatever reason, is unable to carry a baby, or her uterus is misshapen, or who knows what. So they have this concept nowadays that they can take her egg, they can take some of the husband's zera and mix them and implant it into another woman's and implant it into another woman's womb. They also say, by the way, I once saw a cute vort, and I don't remember the marker of it, that says, according to our Gemara, that Dina was actually transformed into a boy, and Yosef was transformed from a boy into a girl, and Yosef the other way around. I once saw a cute vort on it. That is why we find that Dina had certain masculine characteristics, in particular when it says Vatetzi Dina Basleya, she went out in a way that's not usual for women to, and vice versa, that Yosef had certain feminine characteristics. We find, Rashi mentions Mayeshev, Salsa Basire was curling his hair like women usually do. Right, now she mentions on the plus over there she was like her mother, right. So in other words, according to our Gemara over here, what we're saying is that Dina was transformed from a boy into a girl, and then the flip side would be that Yosef was transformed from a girl into a boy. According to the Medrash that Maharsha brings in Nida, it's actually that the babies were always the same gender, but they were switched, the rooms were switched. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Now, we said in the Mishnah that if a person is walking outside the city and he hears a sound of a gishrei and he says, I hope this Yehi Rotzen that this is in my house, then it's a tefillah shav. On the other hand, the Gemara says there can be something a little bit different. Tanan Rabbanan, Maisa Behilal Azokin. It happened once with Hillel HaZaken, Shoya Baba Derech. He was coming home from a trip. He was on the road. V'shama kil tzvacha b'ir. He heard a sound of screaming from the city. V'omar, he says, he doesn't say Yehi Rotzin, because we said in the mission that we had tefillah shav. He says, Muvta chani she'ein zeh b'seich beis. I am certain that this is not in my house. Now, how could he be so certain? So one way of understanding it is that he had great tzaddikim can be on a level, Taka, where he knows that the Eibishter is not going to cause disasters to come in his house. But there is an interesting point that the Shaloah Kodesh says, and various other Achronim bring it in various Lashonis, is that Hillel knew he had trained his family to the extent that even if something bad does happen, they shouldn't cry out and complain. They should accept it. Ba'ava. So therefore, he's saying, even there may be a disaster in my house, Taka, but I am certain that it's not my family crying out because they know not to act that way. They know to accept everything that the Eibishter does, Ba'ava. Yeah.
So, in the Chiyuv, you should
No, no, no. He's not saying it good. He's saying muftach ani shein zebesech beis. I'm certain it's not in my house. I don't know where it is, but I'm certain that it's not in my house. No, he's not chas v'shalom saying I'm happy. And yeah, he's not saying I'm glad it's by somebody else's house. Yeah. All of Akosiroimer on Hillel, the pasuk says, Mishmur ra lo yira, he won't be afraid of bad news, nochen libe b'truach b'Hashem. His heart is firm and he trusts in Hashem. So that describes Hillel's attitude towards the way things happen in life. So Amar Rava, so Rava points out, kol heichi the daushes lahaikra, however you douche in this pasuk, may reishal a sefer midrash or may sefer a reishal midrash. Whether you start with the beginning, with the first half of the pasuk, or the end of the, or the end, or the second half of the pasuk, either way, you can understand the pasuk is giving you the same message. Or Marsha says, in other words, that another way of understanding it is, in effect, you have here a cause and an effect. You have a siba and a masuba. Which is which? You can actually understand the pasuk in both ways. You can understand, you can say midrash or sefer midrash. You can say you go from the beginning to the end. That it's first it's giving the effect, the masuba, and then it's giving the siba. Mishmur ra lo yira. Why is there a person who is not afraid of bad news? Mishum, the nochem libe, but Torah Hashem, because his heart is steadfast, and then trust in Hashem. So in other words, then the pasuk is telling us the fact that he trusts in Hashem is why he's not afraid of bad news. Or misefa l'reishin midrash, you can also darshan it the other way around. Nochen libe matuach b'Hashem, a person whose heart is firm and steadfast and trusting in Hashem, mishmur ro lo yira, such a person will not be afraid of bad news. So what does that mean? So in other words, according to that, then it's the other way around. Or the other way around, that was the first one. Because Mishmur Ra La Yira, therefore, Nochen Libe Batuach B'Hashem. Right. So a couple of the Mefarshim over here at the bottom explain that there is kind of a difference between the two. Like this, Hillel was saying, Muftach Ani She'en Zebesech Beisi, I'm certain that this is not in my house. So in other words, he can be certain that no bad thing like that happened in this house. So that means, in other words, okay, so if a person has Yiras Hashem, Then he can trust that Hashem won't bring him any bad thing, kind of like tracht gut v'zayin gut. But the other way around also, you could have somebody who's not nothing, right? Might also be able to trust like that. As opposed to if you go the other way around, then it's davka. If a person is nothing libra but truach b'Hashem, then mishmur ro lo yira, and otherwise not necessarily. So it's a difference of which one is a necessary prerequisite for the other kind. So in this connection, the Gemara says, "Ahu Talmida dehava shokol v'ozel abasriyad Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi." There was once a Talmud was walking behind Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, the shuk of Tzion, in the marketplace of Tzion. Usually, Tzion is an area of Yerushalayim, so it may mean that they were actually walking in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi lived long after the Churban, so it could be they're visiting the ruins of Yerushalayim, or it could be maybe it was someplace else. Anyway, Chazya dekamathid. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi saw that the Talmud was afraid. Amalei, so Rabbi Shmuel tells him, "Chata'at, you're a sinner. The fact that you're in that kind of mood shows that you have averus and you have to do tshuva on them." Dichtiv kochadu b'tzion chatoim, as the pasuk says, the sinners are afraid in Tzion. We're in Tzion. You're fearful. So it evidently means that you have chatoim. You better shape up. Amalei, so the Talmud says, "V'aksiv asher adam mefachad Talmud." Isn't there a different pasuk that says, "Happy is the person, fortunate is the person who's always afraid"? Amalei, so Rabbi Shmuel answers him, "Ahu b'divrei Torah." That's talking about divrei Torah, that a person should always be afraid that he's going to forget his learning and constantly review it, but that person shouldn't be afraid of other kinds of things, of gashmi, a stick of troubles or whatever. Those are, if a person is, then it means there's something the matter with him. So similarly, also Marsha says there's a Tosfos in Gittin. Now you have at the beginning of the Gemara in Gittin over there when you have the whole sugya about the Churban. It starts out by quoting this pasuk, "My dichtiv asher mafachad tamid u'machshel libe yibo bara," and it mentions the story over there of Kamtza about Kamtza and the story of Beitar and so on and so forth. So Tosfos says so it fits with our Gemara as well, because when our Gemara says the divrei Torah, it doesn't mean only in divrei Torah. It means also a person has to be careful and concerned about what he's doing. And look out for the consequences. A person just shouldn't just do whatever he wants and stand in for who cares about the consequences. For example, with Kamsa about Kamsa, the Balabasa, but they threw him out, and the Chachamim, who didn't protest, should have considered that you have to look at the consequences of offending this guy, and who knows what could happen. And if they had, they would have been more careful, and everything would have been different. So what our Gemara is saying over here is when a person is concerned about things that are beyond his control. So then Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi tells him that's not the right thing to do. Similarly, the Gemara says, Yehuda bar Nosson have a shock of ozel basu de Rabbi Amnona. Yehuda bar Nosson was walking behind Rabbi Amnona. Chazia de komitnach or atnach. He saw that he was sighing or atnach. He actually sighed. Omelay, so Rabbi Amnona asks me, Surah kaboya u gavra la suya the nafshe. Does that person, meaning you, want to bring Yisurim on yourself? Yechtib, after all, Pasuk says, Eev says, ki fachad bochaddi by yesa'ini. Eev says, in his first speech, he says, I was always afraid of bad things that could happen to me. And sure enough, now it came. Vashir yagoti yaveli. And what I was always terrorized about, now it came to me. So you see, in other words, Rav Hamnuna is saying that when a person is worried about something, it's taka apt to come on him. So again, Yehuda bar Nosson says, "Voksiv Asher and Fachad Tamid." What about that pasuk that a person is good if he's worried all the time? And again, he answers, "I hope Dibrei Torah." That's talking about regarding Dibrei Torah. But other than that, things that are outside a person's control, a person needs to have betochen in the Eibishter and not worry about things that he can't control anymore. So no reason to krechts about them. Yom Yom Mashiach Agola. Besides which, anyway, you have the line in Hayom Yom someplace. We're not going to be saved by just size. You want something to change. You got to go out and work for it. Yeah. Okay. Chavdalad Tevis, the Yom Hilula of the Alter Rebbe. So we're in the middle of we started yesterday with the Rebbe asking, how is it that we say that La'asid Lavoi, the Zohar says, that La'asid Lavoi, it says in Torah, we're going to be davening Shemana Esrei out loud if the whole point of Shemana Esrei is bittul to El Kurs, and that's why we're quiet. So the Rebbe explains, La'asid Lavoi, when we will have the ultimate Shlemus of bittul, then we'll have the Nigla Kvod Avaya, V'ro Kabasa Yachtav, that even our flesh itself will see El Kurs. So then in all of Metzius, in all of creation, it will be clearly revealed that Enoid, there is no other Metzius. Within the Jewish people, there'll be openly revealed the fact that Yisrael, the Kutchabrich of Kulachad, meaning that it'll be recognized that the Metzius of Jews is Atzmus, Kaviyachol, like you have the expression in the Gemara, Man Malch Yudabonon, who are the real kings, the Chachamim, meaning that the Chachamim themselves, the Rabbanon themselves, their Metzius is the king. So at that point, La'asid Lavoi, then there'll be revealed we'll see the greatness of the bit of the ultimate bitul that you have in Tefillah, and then at that point you'll be able to have the Tefillah will be out loud, which is that you're revealing the Mila bitul in a way that we don't have. Halacha. Continuing on the topic of brachas achronis after food, if a person, when you have something that tastes better raw than cooked, we've been talking about cooked versus raw. So if you have something that tastes better raw and then cooking makes them deteriorate, then you only say shakol on them when you're cooked. Even if you cook them with meat, and now because of the meat, they taste better, but still, the meat is the ikker, so therefore you only say shako. That's according to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. The Alter Rebbe says different. If they are, in fact, improved in taste, or at least they're not worsened in taste, then in fact, you make the bracha on them, and that covers also the fat of the meat, and then you also have separately the meat, you say shako. If you cook them in a way that they're the ikker and now they're improved, for example, you fried them in fat or honey or something like that, then you say they're appropriate bracha on them because it doesn't really matter whether it was in water or some other kind of liquid.